Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of the OIG Roundtable. We are a roundtable this week, but we have, I always say, Wade, that if it's not you, me, and Matt, like no one else is invited to the party. But this week, Matt is finishing up his PTO. He'll be back next week. But we've got a special dispensation because
I crashed.
Yeah, you crashed. But a lot of people know Gene Stone. A lot of people don't. And so we're going to have an introduction to Gene Stone in a minute. But, we always say the round table is like the Knights of the Round Table. It's the Knights of the Fraud, Waste, Abuse Round Table. And this week's OIG Round Table, we have the Queen of the Fraud, Waste, Abuse Round Table. Now, a lot of people know I talk very frequently about when I was a baby agent at the OIG. I have people that I consider to be two mentors in my career. One, it was Jason Eisengrind, who works as a consultant for us. He was my OIG agent mentor, taught me a lot about how to do investigations and kind of the basics of being an agent. And of course, Gene Stone, who was at the time in New York Region 2 at CPI, which wasn't known as CPI back then, from the Medicare perspective. So, Gene, you get special dispensation for coming on for this week's episode. Of course, I've got Wade McFall. I'm gonna say it right just because Gene's here, but everybody
Thank
knows
you.
it's really everybody knows it's McFall. Wade retired, assistant special agent in charge from the LA office, and one of the directors on our investigative team, helping to oversee right now actually one of our larger CMS contracts. And then of course, Gene Stone, who spent 46 years at CMS in a variety of capacities. And those that have been in the healthcare fraud, waste, abuse space know Gene very well. Gene has been a consultant with us here at Advise for a number of years, and she's working really hard for us on a lot of projects involving our New York SIU things. And Gene, what did I miss? What did I miss? 46 years with CMS. You have forgotten more than most people know. And as I always say, you've testified more than anyone I know, including many of my trials. What am I missing?
I got to be an instructor at FLETC, the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. I taught OIG agents in Glencoe, Georgia, and then in Largo, Maryland. And I got to teach FBI agents at Quantico. Agents knew how to rappel down buildings, how to break through doors. FBI knew banking fraud, but healthcare was a different animal. And so being able to break down just Medicare and Medicaid, Title 18 and 19 of the Social Security Act, and the legwork behind all of that, how to articulate the cases and bring them forward. So and
And
I've been
let's not
retired.
also forget, let's not also forget that you've also spent a lot of time at the National Advocacy Center in is it Charleston in South Carolina?
University of South Carolina. Yep.
And for those that don't know, the National Advocacy Center is run by the Executive Office of the U.S. Attorney's Office, and that's where a lot of brand new AUSAs go, Medicaid Fraud Control Unit lawyers, Medicaid Fraud Control Unit investigators, local, state, doesn't really matter. A lot of people go there and they get a lot of different training. You've also done a lot of training there on healthcare fraud and the Medicare program. And also, let's also not forget that when OIG agents are done at FLETC and they go to the special agent basic training, you teach the Medicare 101, kind of the basics, the things that people need to know, and as I call it, the alphabet soup of Medicare. So, it's 46 years, you were there for the beginning and you were there through a lot of the things that have gone on. And still continue to be a contributor. And we're going to be talking a lot about those contributions relative to the Senior Medicare Patrol. And I know we've talked a lot about that in previous podcasts. We just want to talk about some of the sort of operationally, some of that collaboration. And so, Wade, let's get right into it because, we talk a lot, Gene, Wade, Matt, and I, we talk a lot about the importance of the collaboration that needs to occur in the SIU payment integrity space on the payer side. Oftentimes Matt, Wade, and I get mired in discussions about OIG things. We talk a lot about cases and the resolution of cases and criminal cases and civil cases and sort of hints, tips, and tricks for payment integrity and SIU plans. But SIUs and plans are really the bulk of where investigative work occurs, whether it be for resolving cases with an overpayment or referral. But that collaboration And we talk a lot about internally, the days of just being a standalone SIU really need to be over, because it really is about the broader payment integrity, having strong policies, having working policies, having good analytics, having analytics that work with your NCCI edits, your MUEs, your plan edits. Do your edits match your policies? When a provider is being paid for something that they shouldn't have been paid for in the plan's mind, what was the impetus for why that payment shouldn't have occurred? What's the root cause analysis? And so, Wade, we talk a lot. We lost Jean because I think Jean is unfortunately on her phone, so she's getting some calls here and there. But Wade, let's start with talking about the importance of that collaboration. And we'll, you know, whether I hate to use corporate speak, cross-functional collaboration and all that. And, you know, for us, it's really just getting the right people in the room to have the conversations about getting the information that you need. And whether that's information that's going to help you at the moment, or it's having an expanded ability to speak to people when you need them. So first of all, collaboration within payment integrity, no-brainer. Collaboration externally, no-brainer. But then we get on to something, which is the senior Medicare patrol. You know, I worked with them a lot in New Jersey. You worked with them a lot. You were actually pretty intrinsically involved with them in LA. And they play a really pivotal role in not only the ability to get cases for referral, but they serve as a great conduit of just information, ears to the wall about what's happening.
Right. And I worked with, I met with the SMP from LA, Orange County, and in Honolulu. So I didn't meet every quarter with all of them, but a couple times a year I'd meet with them. And they were probably the most engaging audience or set of participants. They always had very pertinent, relevant questions. They were very curious as to what we were seeing in the OIG field, in the investigative field. They were eager to tell us about what they were seeing and hearing. So a lot of times it wasn't generally something that was completely foreign to us, but we would get some good leads from like trends for them. We talk about trends that we're seeing in, like identity theft. It was a big upswing where once people give up their Medicare card, it's on a list and it's being used. A lot of interactions with, marketers and cappers, and we would try and warn them about, not giving up your Social Security number, your Medicare number, things like that. And in return, we would kind of get the man on the street view from all these people who were, again, very eager to speak to us. I know in Honolulu, I think the last couple meetings we had, we would just tell them we're going to be there and we'd meet for an hour, and there'd be like 50 or 60 volunteers there, SMP volunteers. They all wanted to tell their story. They all wanted to, put their two cents in. So it was really interesting. And they were, again, probably the most engaging group that I've dealt with in speaking with, different agencies and agents. It was a different crowd with SMP, and it was pretty effective meetings, in my opinion.
And so it's interesting, what people may not know is when you were the assistant special agent in charge, when you were one of the assistant special agent, or ASACs as they call them, in LA, the LA field office was the hub for a number of other sub offices or regional offices, right? So LA also oversaw agents that were in, for example, Phoenix or Las Vegas. And at the time, there was an office in Honolulu, Hawaii. You unfortunately had to manage that office, which required you to have to go to Honolulu. So that's why. Yeah. For people that don't fully understand that, that's why you had to go over to Honolulu for some of that. And so, obviously the importance of that collaboration, and obviously what winds up happening regionally is that the fraud schemes that you see in LA may be different than the fraud schemes that you're seeing in Hawaii or Honolulu, for example. And so it is important to be able to have that diversity, and as from the OIG side, going to all of those. But what I would generally say is that if you are with a plan that is regional in nature, that you focus on the senior Medicare patrol, the SMP, that's in that region that you're in. If you're a plan and you're doing SIU or payment integrity work that goes across state lines and your work crosses state lines, that's where you have to think about it. So it's important, Wade, I think the distinction is that when you're going to the Honolulu SMP, it wasn't for cost comparison purposes or anything. You were managing different offices, and SIU people who are not working across a state line or a regional line, you're just going to deal with the SMP that's sort of relative to where you're going. But the fact that you're saying you would go to some of these meetings, there'd be 50 or 60 volunteers, is really a testament to the importance of the SMP. First of all, the Senior Medicare Patrol is an HHS or CMS funded organization, but it is also funded through the sweat equity of the volunteers. So, SMP offices, sometimes they're in space that's donated. For example, the New Jersey SMP, a very small number of employees, and they're in a tiny space in the basement of like a community recreation center. So SMPs are really, for lack of a better term, grassroots bootstrapped organizations that really rely upon the strength in numbers of the volunteers. One of the things that I really appreciate about Senior Medicare Patrol that a lot of people don't realize is every year during open enrollment, one of the biggest challenges that the Medicare population faces is enrolling in a Part D program or enrolling in a Medicare Advantage program. What you will often see during open enrollment is our representatives from the Senior Medicare Patrol setting themselves up at community fairs, health fairs, at big box pharmacies, helping seniors who may not be technologically savvy figuring out what the best plan is for them. Now, understand, the SMP is not going into any proprietary tools. There's nothing magic about what they're doing. It's all common sense approaches from that perspective. They're basically going on to the Medicare websites, and they're just helping seniors that aren't technologically savvy navigate. That's just one piece of the puzzle. So, Gene, welcome back. I know that you're having some technology issues. You're on your phone, and this is life. We live in a technology world. You came just at the right time. So the Senior Medicare Patrol does a lot of things, but one of the things that I think is the strongest piece of the puzzle, outside of their sort of ombudsman-related things and their advocacy for seniors, which is where they really do come in, is the SMP's kind of meat and potatoes, is their ability to help with navigating concerns that seniors have about fraud, waste, abuse. And not only concerns that they have, but also the education of seniors on fraud, waste, abuse issues, and working to serve as that liaison. And for those that don't know, you were a semi-victim of Medicare fraud yourself. And that to me just says, if it can happen to Gene Stone, it can happen to anyone. But your position, and you've been with the New York Senior SMP, Senior Medicare Patrol, for many, many years. And they are a formidable group. They do a lot of outreach. They collaborate a lot with not only law enforcement, but local payers, regional payers, national payers. Talk a little bit, Gene, as kind of a widely known face of what goes on at the SMB. Talk a little bit about what some of the Senior Medicare Patrol things are happening in one of the largest states in the country, suffering from some of the top, fraud schemes, being New York.
And New York Senior Medicare Patrol has a lot of out. I'm in the New York Manhattan section. There's a Brooklyn group. There's an upstate group. We all literally piled onto buses in Manhattan in April to go to Albany to meet with our state assembly and Senate representatives to help protect Medicare funding for Senior Medicare Patrol, for the 800 number, for 1-800-MEDICARE, to get, to be able to publicize it, to get that kind of information out there. The Senior Medicare Patrol is collaborative. We work with partners in the community. A lot of volunteers are out there. We have health fairs giving out information about how to stay healthy, how to report fraud. We coordinate with Office of Inspector General. We coordinate in New York. There is the regional office for CMS is extremely active and participates, helps fund or sponsor our meetings. We do there's a Region 2 healthcare fraud working group with OIG, Department of Justice, FBI, CMS. And Senior Medicare Patrol is under the Administration on Community Living, which is a section of HHS, in close collaboration. There is, as I said, the 1-800 number. The volume is what's really surprising. When I first started working and doing outreach and education, there were 35, then 38 million Medicare beneficiaries. They are now more than 70 million enrollees in Medicare, and more than 11,000 a day sign up and age in. By 2030, all baby boomers will be enrolled, and Americans are living longer. So the pressure is on budget-wise to maintain the funding for the program and also the appropriate oversight and the assistance to beneficiaries and their caregivers and their families. Answering questions, you know, when claims are paid, you know, if they're paid inappropriately or not paid, or services aren't rendered and billed for, you know, dealing with and knowing who to reach out to. And there's a tipping point.
Right.
If you used to be, the vast majority of Medicare patients were in fee-for-service. And now we've reached a tipping point. 51.2% of beneficiaries are in Medicare Advantage plans. So less than 50% are in fee-for-service. And so it's also coordinating providers and the information and looking at Medicare summary notices and, you know, trying to match what was actually billed, what was provided,
right,
what was paid for, what the patient's liability is, and then being able to report that information accurately to the billers and taking action.
And one of the things that we know is that there really is a push to move the Medicare population out of fee-for-service and into Medicare Advantage plans, or as we used to call it, Medicare Part C. So we know that there's a big push to do that as part of a cost containment strategy or what have you. So I think that as the years go on, we're going to continue to see that shift in that population number from fee-for-service to from traditional. We see it already in the Medicaid space. Some states don't even have fee-for-service as an option anymore. Most states are moving towards that cost containment methodology. But one of the things that I think people oftentimes don't realize from SMP, and this is, I think, also an important piece of this, is that a lot of commercial payers have Medicaid lines of business, but certainly have Medicare Advantage lines of business. And one of the things that we know happens is that when Medicaid beneficiaries get their remittance sheet, their explanation of Medicare benefits, their EOMB, we've all gotten them for our commercial plans. They're hard to read. They're not very clear. They're not to a level that you can understand. The three of us have been doing this for a very long time, and we get these statements, and it's confusing to us as well. Imagine what it looks like when you are a layperson, Medicare beneficiary, Medicaid member, and you get your statement in the mail, the complexities of that. And one of the things that S&P is very good at is helping people navigate understanding those things, but also understanding when something doesn't seem to pass the fraud, waste, abuse smell test. And so one of the places that S&P does a great job is in its external collaboration with the payer community and sharing information about fraud schemes that the SMP is hearing about and seeing and dealing with and navigating those waters. And so I know that there has been a recent reinvigoration of meetings that are occurring sponsored by the OIG and the FBI, but they're not just relegated to the FBI or the OIG. We as advise go because we're running SIUs for a lot of plans. And so we go and
the plans themselves and representatives, the state right. Medicaid agencies, you know, OMIG, everybody has someone at the table. And, you know, getting the information out, we put out fraud alerts on a regular basis. Obviously DME and, you know, it used to be the back braces, you know, now it's urinary care kits. Well, now they've changed the name because all of the fraud warnings said, you know, be wary if you're getting these urinary catheter kits. And now they're bladder control. And they're just changing the wording so it's not the same. So it doesn't, for the people who, you know, it sets off bells for, it's not setting off those bells. The other right. issue is that language. You know, we have so many beneficiaries that English is not their native language. SMP and CMS put out tons of information in lots of different languages. But families and caregivers and beneficiaries don't even know sometimes the availability of these tools that can help them. And, you know, all of our CMS and Senior Medicare Patrol and our and the contractors have access to these translation services. They just need to know right. how to access them and to convey that to the patients and their families.
Well, and part of that is the fact that SMP's strength are in the volunteers, which you all recruit from the communities from where the volunteers live. So you have, in some regards, some inherent cultural bonuses that are inherent with the fact that if you have a fraud scheme that you know is occurring in a particular cultural community, you have members of that community at the Senior Medicare Patrol who can speak to those people with that cultural understanding. And that is a benefit that I don't think anybody really understands until you've spoken with someone within that culture and you learn of the challenges within those cultural divergences. That the Senior Medicare Patrol is a grassroots organization. And so you inherently have some of those tools in the toolbox that people may not even realize exist because of it. So people need to tap into that. So let's talk, before I turn it over to Wade for final thoughts as we wrap up, Gene, you brought up something that's kind of important, which is that the SMP puts out fraud alerts. The OIG puts out fraud alerts. The DOJ puts out fraud alerts. Plans put out fraud alerts. How do people access a Senior Medicare Patrol fraud alert if someone wants to look and see? Which, by the way, the fraud alerts that the SMP puts out may be similar to other fraud alerts, but they're, again, these are fraud alerts that come out from a grassroots. It's things they're hearing from meeting with the community, the local community. Where can people find a Senior Medicare Patrol fraud alert?
Right. And I will send you the link so that people can go on and just really click on it. So when this goes out, you'll have the very specifics. But it is through the Senior Medicare Patrol. You can also get it through the Administration on Community Living. We have our New York State number. It's not an 800 number, but I will also include that in the information we're sending out. May is the Older Americans Month. So there's a big push. Today is actually National Senior Health and Fitness Day. It's also Health Awareness Month, Mental Health Awareness Month, Arthritis, Lupus, Cystic Fibrosis, and Stroke Awareness. So May is when the big push is on before summer. Winter's over. People are, you know, going to be much more active. They're going to be out and about. They're not, you know, locked in their homes during the winter months. And that's a positive thing and that's a negative thing because right. they're much more out in the community and they're much more, it's almost like they should have targets on their back in some communities, you know, right. where they're induced to come to certain places. Obviously, activities are something that really draw people in, especially seniors and the disabled. It also is when there are links with the community, you know, the shared language, same shared religion, shared cultural practices, same holidays. It works. There's a positive and the negative. You know, there's always kind of a dark side to things. So it's just, you know, getting the word out, getting involved, you know, like in the regional meetings and the local meetings, and in local links to other kinds of services, transportation, education, outreach and training. You know, the ombudsman really help, you know, when they don't need to know how to do everything themselves if they know where to go to get that information.
Right.
And so it's kind of putting that information out in senior centers, senior housing, large housing complexes, you know, outreach and education, senior Medicare patrol. We go out, you know, into Brooklyn has their own, and they meet over at Borough Hall in Brooklyn. In New York, we meet at 1199 Union headquarters right near Penn Station, so people can get in and out and get to the meetings. Because if it's difficult to get to,
People are not going to go. And it's, so I've got up on the screen, this is the consumer fraud alert. So you just go to this smpresource.org. And from there, that's the homepage. And you can click on Medicare fraud and you can click on fraud alerts, all of that right off of that website. So, as we wrap up, the one thing that Gene mentioned, which is for me, I think it's one of the most important pieces of the puzzle. We work in a culturally diverse environment. Our industry is culturally diverse. It's not cookie cutter. The only people that are not immigrants to this country are those that are Native Americans. Everybody else came from somewhere else. And when you're in a country where culturally you have communities that are culturally centric. In New York, we have Koreatown, Chinatown, right? We have Little Odessa, which is the Russian community in Brooklyn. You go into New Jersey and you've got in Union City, the largest Cuban population outside of Cuba. In California, when you're in LA, large Armenian populations, large Asian populations. Kind of as we wrap up, and I know, you know, when you were working cases and managing cases in LA, for example, and in Honolulu, you have the same thing, very different culture, right? The island culture is very different. Having the ability to have resources for people that can help you with things like translation, cultural norms that may be different. You know, I'm always reminded of the time that Richard Nixon flew to Asia, and as he was leaving, he gave the peace sign. And it was like the world was coming to an end because culturally, this doesn't mean the same here as it does in other places. So as we come to an end, it's super important to be able to have the ability to tap into these resources, to be able to get information and be able to disseminate information to the people that you need to.
Yeah, that is one of the key, I think, aspects, that the fact that they come from the neighborhood, they're not hired from, you know, throughout the country and then shipped in to work at the SMP in LA or Orange County. They're from the community, and that not only helps for, like as I was talking about earlier, they're very willing to tell us what they're seeing on the streets, and they're very eager to hear what we're seeing, but then they can also go back and they're like the messengers for the rest of their neighborhood. They go back and they tell, you know, their family and their neighbors and their friends about what we're seeing. They talk about how they discuss what they're seeing with us. So if you don't have that cross section of the community, you're not going to get that same, like, really effectiveness. So that is probably one of the key points, that they're from the community and they can go back out and disseminate the information.
Yeah, and you can't take away from the importance of that, particularly when you're in a community where people don't ever leave the community because they have no need or language. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've been in communities where the people didn't speak any English and they didn't need to. Their doctors, their drugstore, their grocery store, their bank, all of the things that they need to get done with their daily living activities are all in that community. If they go to the doctor speaks their language and is from their country originally. If they need physical therapy, they're going to a physical therapist from that country. So that is a challenge in and of itself. And when you have certain resources that can help navigate that, it really does save you a lot of trouble. And it oftentimes is just a phone call away. Senior Medicaid patrols all over the country. They may not be in your direct neighborhood, but they're all over the place and can get you where you need to go. So, Gene, thanks as always for coming. We're going to have you on in a few weeks. We've got some other, we know you're working on some projects. We're not ready to start discussing them, but we are doing some collaboration because you are bridging the gap between our SIU team, our New York work, and the SMP. So we do want to talk about that. We're just not ready to have those discussions. So as always, it's always great to have you on and do our LinkedIn Lives with you and have you on. Again, I don't really, we're a closed group here. So the fact that we gave you the crown in Matt's absence, it's great. So it's always good seeing you. Wade, as always, your insights are great on these things. And we appreciate everybody spending their time on the LinkedIn Lives and our weekly podcast here, the OIG Roundtable. Again, you can get it on Spotify. You can get it on YouTube. Just go on to the YouTube channel or Spotify, look up Advise Health, and you can subscribe. And until next week, we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.